This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Did you know in Victorian England, people ate ice cream with a fork? And that some teacups had this little lip-shaped ledge so that men's mustache wax wouldn't melt as they drank their tea? Or that lasagna can be found readily in Eritrea, Africa? All of these fun food facts and much, much more can be found in a jam-packed, almost encyclopedic book called Gastro Obscura, A Food Adventurer's Guide, co-authored by Cecily Wong and Dylan Thuris. It is the latest work from the world travelers at Atlas Obscura. In the book, we visit all seven continents, yes, including Antarctica, and learn about food celebrations, customs, preparations, and techniques. In the span of two pages, you can go from a biography of a Greek immigrant to New York City, Tom Carvel, the mastermind behind the ice cream, to an LSD nightmare fish with hallucinogenic properties eaten throughout the Mediterranean. Here to help us explore the new book is co-author Cecily Wong. Hi, Cecily.
Hi.
So, you know, you are a fiction writer. People probably recognize your name. And you describe yourself as a novelist and a vault of obscure food knowledge. How did you get involved in this project?
my two main character traits, fiction and obscure food. So, as you said, I'm primarily a novelist. I write fiction. But when they launched Gastro Obscura back in 2017, they were kind of looking to approach food in a different way, in a more narrative style, focusing on the storytelling, on kind of the kooky histories behind foods and cultural traditions and stuff like that. I grew up in a food family. My parents owned restaurants, so I was raised in the kitchen, and I'm just a very enthusiastic eater.
What does the field research look like for this book?
It's a lot of eating, it's a lot of reading, it's a lot of watching videos, reaching out to people. We just took it kind of slowly. It was kind of slow and fast. We did it over 4 years, which is a long time, but there are over 500 entries in this book. We cover the whole world. So it was a pretty fast clip. And we went continent by continent and then country by country within that, and we just started filling it out the best we could, and then we'd skip over places, come back to them, reach out to people in those communities, see if they had anything for us to track down, and we just kept tasting and reading.
Sometimes when you're working on a project like this, which is really huge and spans years, you have to kind of come back to the touchstone, to the what is it and why are we doing it? How would you describe that?
Like, exactly.
What were the criteria? What is this and why are we doing it?
Sure. So we, you know, our mission is kind of to spotlight foods that are obscure, that are lesser known, that are not celebrated the way that we feel like they should be, or they're celebrated in absurd ways that we want to highlight. And so the first thing that we were looking for is stories. We love these foods that have these really rich histories or backstories. Some of the best foods that we found are foods that we eat every day, but they have stories that we don't know about. One of my favorite ones is about the pineapple. We eat pineapples all the time. They're super cheap. You can buy them at the store. But when they first arrived in Europe, especially in England, they were kind of unfathomably expensive. And so they became this status symbol for rich people. They would rent pineapples as a showpiece for parties. And then they would give it back, and the owner of the pineapple would sell it to someone who was a lot richer than the renter. And I think an 18th century pineapple was something like $8,000 in today's money.
That's crazy. What a good story. That's why it's in Gastro Obscura, A Food Adventurer's Guide. I'm speaking to one of its co-authors, Cecily Wong. Okay, so I'm just going to go straight and straight to New York, since we're WNYC. There's this great, on page 334, you write about the lost language of New York soda jerks. Remind people what a soda jerk is.
It's that old profession of someone who worked behind the counter of a soda shop, and they did all sorts of things. You know, they worked the fountain, but they also scooped ice cream, made sandwiches. They were really busy. They were doing lots of stuff. And so they came up with their own lingo. And we ran a long article actually about this, lost language on the website, and so we got to pull some of our favorite terms.
I'm going to read. Can I read a couple, and maybe you read a couple?
Yes, please. Yes.
All right. So, add another is coffee. All black is chocolate soda with chocolate ice cream. Baby, glass of fresh milk. Black bottom, chocolate sundae with chocolate syrup. Black cow, chocolate milk. CO cocktail, castor oil prepared in soda.
Yes, exactly.
What are a few you like?
And then you can combine them. So if you wanted a float, someone might shout, "Burn it and let it swim." And then if you wanted a chocolate malted milk with chocolate ice cream, they might say, "Burn one all the way," which apparently that's what that means. And then if you wanted an egg instead of ice cream, they might say, "Twist it, choke it, and make it cackle."
That's so funny. That is from Gastro Obscura, A Food Adventurer's Guide. So let's stay in the area. Another New York entry takes us outside of the city to the Delaware Delicacies Smokehouse in Hancock, New York, where you can buy Ray Turner's famous smoked eels. So tell us a little more about Ray Turner. Tell us a little bit more about these
Ray
smoked
Turner.
Eels.
Yeah, Ray Turner is supposed to be just this really eccentric character, the kind of person we love at Gastro Obscura. He is in this wooden shack out in the woods of Hancock, New York, and he catches wild eels himself, and then he smokes them. So he has a very limited amount of eels. It's whatever he catches, whatever he smokes himself, and that's what you get. And the way to get there is it's obscure in itself. You just have to follow these signs for the Delaware Delicacies Smokehouse, which is on Route 17. And then it's a dirt road. You pass a quarry, and it's at the end of this road, this very small store and smokehouse. And then Ray, who's this this guy with this super long white beard, he's just in there selling his eels.
Go Ray. Good to be Ray. So this is,
yeah,
I want to talk about my home state of New Jersey, the Garden State. This cracked me up when I opened up because I love an old school diner so much. I don't know if it's because I am from New Jersey. This whole chapter is called The Golden Age of New Jersey Diners. And hilariously, Cicely, I've been to one of these diners recently, the Agawam Diner in Rowley, Mass.
It
was just so
cool.
Well, I was taking my kid to camp up in Maine, and I saw this cool diner, and I said, "Let's pull over. That's a cool-looking diner." And it's one of the ones featured in the book. What is it about New Jersey and exporting diners?
You know, I don't know what it is. New Jersey just has a huge love for diners, and I think that it must be in your blood that you're drawn to them. I mean, New Jersey has the most diners, and the diners that we're featuring on this page are diners that were originally made and shipped from New Jersey, and now they're all over the world. So this one that you went to in Massachusetts came from this kind of golden age of manufacturing these shippable diners. And there are a few scattered across the states that are still this kind of original Jersey manufactured diner.
Well, we should talk about the rest of the world, not just our area.
Well, what do you call pork roll? Are you a pork roll or are you a Taylor ham?
Taylor ham. Taylor ham.
Interesting.
Yeah,
all right.
I don't know, but my people are Southern as well, so you know, it's an interpork family. Let's put it that way.
The best kind. All pork babes accepted.
The book is called Gastro Obscura, A Food Adventurer's Guide. My guest is Cecily Wong, who is one of the co-authors. So we are going to go outside of the tri-state area. Let's go to Southeast Asia. And there is an entry. It's on page 168. It's about the Monkey Buffet Festival. What's a monkey buffet?
Yes, I'm dying to go to this monkey buffet. It's not for us. It's for monkeys. This happens every year in central Thailand. There's this 13th century temple, and they every year they cover it with just the most incredible looking buffet of fruits, gorgeously displayed. It's for the express purpose of feeding the monkeys. They just let the monkeys run wild and all this fruit and have the best day ever.
It does. Look, the picture too looks like the best day of best day ever. The other one I wanted from this section to talk about was the butterfly pea flower. That's been popular, from what I read. This is all stuff I got from the book. Popular in Asia for centuries. Like I would actually know this. The butterfly pea flower. Tell us a little bit about it and its magical way of changing colors.
Yes. So this is an extract from the butterfly pea flower. If you're in Southeast Asia, you might notice sometimes you're served a drink that's purple, or you're eating a dumpling that's been colored purple. This is because of the butterfly pea flower. It is indigo colored, but one of the magic things about this flower is that it changes colors depending on the pH. So it's also entered the craft cocktail scene, where you can do this kind of cocktail live show by squirting lemon into a drink with butterfly pea flower, and it changes colors.
That's so cool. One of the things that as we were leafing through the book, we noticed that there are sort of certain things come up again in certain cultures. And everyone seems to have a version of a dumpling, from like a pierogi to shumai. Did you notice any other sort of food through lines as you were doing research?
Yes, lots and lots. And we noticed so many that we started making these double page spreads called pantry staples, because mm-hmm. we just found too many things. So milk was one. Everyone drinks very unique types of milk. There's a fermented milk. People are drinking goat's milk. Back in the Victorian times, well, I'm not sure if that's the right time, but they were making artificial ass's milk with snails. Mustard is another one. Almost every culture uses mustard in a different way, and there's lots of overlap with mustard. It's one of those great ingredients. It's ancient. It never spoils, and so this became popular everywhere. Mustard was one of the...
When something becomes popular, I'm sorry to interrupt you. When something becomes no, popular please. Everywhere, is there a particular reason for it? Is that a geopolitical reason in any way?
No, I think that what we found is when things pop up everywhere, it's generally a preservation technique. It's a way of making food edible. And, you know, all of our eating traditions, a lot of them are, you know, they stem from something very ancient where people were just trying to feed themselves food that was safe. And so pickling, fermenting, smoking, all of those things you see all across the world, people are using different ingredients and everything tastes a little different, but everyone came to these same techniques in order to eat through the winter and to preserve whatever they had.
When you get to the very, very end of the book, we get to Antarctica. Tell me about trying to include Antarctica in this book. How did you go about it?
Yeah. This was my co-author Dylan's pet project. He did this whole spread himself, and he did a phenomenal job. Basically, he covers the cuisine of all the base stations, and there's mm-hmm. actually some pretty vibrant cuisine happening in Antarctica. The Italians have a pizza night. Apparently the food at the Chinese station is extremely good. There's a bar, there's a lot of really interesting foods to eat up there. And you would never think it.
All right. It's the worst question, I know, but is there something in this book that is just the thing you tell everybody about? It's the one that just stays with you, tickles your fancy, makes you laugh, makes you think. Is there one thing?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things. I love this marathon that happens every year in France. It is called the Marathon du Médoc. It happens in the Médoc wine region. It's a regular marathon where you run the 26 miles, but you stop 23 times to drink a glass of wine, which is just so hardcore. But not only that, you also eat foie gras, you eat oysters, you eat steak, there's ice cream. So your stop, so you're running through wine country, through vineyards, there's chateaus, there's lakes, people are in costume, and you're stopping to have these like mini feasts along the way. And it just, I've never seen anything like it.
Now, for people who are intrigued by this book, I understand there's something going on in Union Square that they can take part in. Would you tell people what this is?
Yes, there is. We have a Gastro Obscura vending machine. We have stocked a custom vending machine full of foods that you find in this book that are not easily found. And so we put them in this vending machine. We set the vending machine up in Union Square. It's still there right now. You can visit it. You can buy a book, and you can buy an obscure food from the pages.
And also, I just want to point out, this is the only time when radio fails. The book is beautiful. I want to say that too. It's really beautifully done and entertaining and interesting. And I learned a lot. The name of it is Gastro Obscura, a food adventurer's guide. I've been speaking with co-author of the book, Cecily Wong. Cecily, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. That was great.